Remembering Bridgeport's L'Ambiance Plaza collapse. Tony and Melissa in the morning. WICC 600.
OSHA investigators began one of the most extensive investigations in the agency's history. We found serious disregard for basic, fundamental engineering practices, a factor directly related to the cause of the collapse. We found obvious and unacceptable design deficiencies in the concrete lifting system that could have been detected with rudimentary engineering analysis. We found that on two occasions prior to the April 23rd collapse, the lifting system had failed in virtually the same way that it did on the day of the accident at L'Ambiance. We found that employers responsible for the system ignored these early warnings.
That's what investigators said 6 months after the L'Ambiance collapse here in Bridgeport. This is the 33rd anniversary of that tragic event. Not long after lunch on April 23rd, 1987, workers returned to their normal routines at a construction site near Bridgeport's Central Business District. The site was intended to be the future home of the $17.5 million L'Ambiance Plaza complex. Efforts that afternoon focused on laying concrete slabs for the floors of a 16-story residential building. But then suddenly, at 1:36 p.m., seven completed floors of the building structure toppled inward, crumbling into a pile of debris and dust. The collapse resulted in the deaths of 28 construction workers and injuries to 22 others. Now, this is something that happened 33 years ago, but life in Bridgeport has never, ever, ever been the same. And usually they do a big ceremony, like I've been saying, down at the site each and every year, and they name every single person that lost their lives that particular day, following by the ring of a bell. They're not able to do that this year because of COVID-19. But we decided, hey, you know, this has got to be remembered. And we gave them this whole hour here this morning for remembrances here. And in just a little bit, Dan McInerney is going to be on. He's going to read the names. We'll ring the bell. And it will show respect and reverence this morning to those workers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I think that this is a really important thing, especially in the midst of the pandemic. I think that sometimes, you know, we kind of go about our day to day and we forget that, you know, there were big times in history that kind of went by us. You know, we had Apollo 13 last week, that if we hadn't taken the time to talk about that, many people were touched by that and certainly interested in it. And this is something that, you're right, Tony, you know, this not only was something that touched Bridgeport, but this was big news nationally for days on end. You know, Al Warren was on earlier this show and told us how this was the big news story here across the country. I mean, this was probably one of the worst construction disasters of our modern time here in Connecticut. And I would even argue nationwide. So I'm glad that we have a number of guests who are going to be joining us and giving us their input. I believe we have the lieutenant governor who's going to be joining us first. Do we have the lieutenant governor?
Yes, we do. Susan Bisewitz is here. Good morning. It's an honor to have you here this morning. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, good morning, Tony and Melissa. And thank you so much for having me. For years, I have been going to this ceremony outdoors on this day to mark what happened 33 years ago. And you know, here we are doing a virtual remembrance, but it's just so important. You remember, especially now, we know life is so fragile and we're reminded about that every day. And also, we have healthcare workers and grocery store workers and pharmacy workers and delivery people and first responders and postal delivery folks who are out there every day putting their lives on the line. Just like those construction workers who died that day did. So we have an opportunity to think about the past, but also to reflect upon those people who are doing very important work for us every day.
Lieutenant Governor, I think each and every one of us who is old enough to remember when it happened, I think we can all tell us, you know, say exactly where we were at that moment. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us what you were doing at that exact moment when you heard?
I'll tell you what I was doing. I had just graduated from Duke Law School, and I was working on the 40th floor of a very tall building in New York City. And I remember thinking, looking around at all the buildings around me, thinking, you know, faulty construction could cause any one of those buildings to collapse. What a terrible thing. And I want to also just bring up the people who are behind this remembrance every year for the past 33 years. And it's been the Fairfield County Building Trades, and it's been the United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 371, that do this every year because they want to highlight that unions are part of the advocacy for workers to help keep them safe, to make sure that OSHA regulations are enforced and that their people are safe. And I just had a call with Tom Wilkinson, who's the head of the Food and Commercial Workers Union, and he told me how many workers are sick at the grocery stores that he represents, that he's had so many people who are now suffering with COVID. They represent Stop and Shop workers, you know, all over Connecticut and the Northeast. So I think it's important to know that the union are the ones who advocate for worker safety and have been doing this ceremony for many years. Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am. Well said. Thank you very, very much. Lieutenant Governor Bicewicz, thank you so much for taking a few moments. Thank you so much for being here today. And thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Absolutely. And I just want to send my condolences to the families of those 28 people whose names you're going to read in a little while. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very, very much. All right. That's Lieutenant Governor Bicewicz here this morning as we continue our tribute to the L'Ambiance tragedy. 33 years ago today, that building collapsed here in Bridgeport. Life has not been the same. We move along. We've got, I believe this is Senator Blumenthal. He's returning. He was with us earlier this morning, but he's come back as well to make some comments as well. Senator Blumenthal, how are you this morning, sir?
I am well, and thank you to you, Tony, and Melissa, and WICC for doing this virtual tribute. Like many of you, literally every year, I don't know that I've missed a year. I may have missed a year here or there, but every year for the past 33, I've been out there in front of the old City Hall with our brothers and sisters from organized labor to remember these really valiant workers who were so missed by many of their families. They left that morning and their families expected them to return. They had a right to expect them to return. But here's what we should remember, that lift slab technique had been found to be unsafe years, literally years before the collapse. Mm-hmm. And yet it was permitted to be used. That atrocity, that needless loss of life should make us angry as well as sad. And we ought to be angry about continuing workplace safety violations that occur right now in real time in this age of the COVID epidemic. Workers on the front lines are on the job in unsafe circumstances without the protective equipment they need, whether they are in nursing homes or grocery stores, or sometimes even our police and firefighters lack the masks and so forth that they need. And of course, our frontline healthcare workers. And here is the scandal that is unfolding right before our eyes. OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, is declining to issue an emergency temporary standard, an ETS, that would protect workers now on the job. You know, I have dealt with OSHA employees, inspectors, and so forth, and they are to be commended. They work hard. They're dedicated. The folks in Connecticut do their job every day. But the leadership in Washington is literally perverting and abandoning the law and their responsibility. There's a vacuum of oversight. And we sought to include in these relief packages, the emergency legislation that have been passed, the $2.2 trillion measure at the end of March, and now most recently in on Wednesday of this week, hopefully it will be passed today, a specific measure that will force OSHA to enforce this law. And unfortunately, our colleagues, I don't want to be political on this call, but they were not on our side of the aisle, resisted including it. So OSHA has waived all reporting requirements as of April 10th for COVID-related diseases. It has said the states are on their own to enforce workplace safety standards. It has declined to enforce OSHA law. And I think we all ought to be angry about this betrayal of the purpose of the Occupational Safety Act, because it is to protect literally our friends, our neighbors, our family members who go to work every day like those L'Ambiance Plaza workers did, expecting to come home without being sick, without being injured, without being killed on the job. And yet worker safety is still a problem every day in America. And that's the message that I hope we remember on this day of sadness and commemoration, remembrance, but also let's be angry that in the United States of America, we don't do a better job on workplace safety. And so my thanks to the building trades, UFCW, all of the brothers and sisters in the unions who have brought us together today. And thank you again to WICC.
Senator, thank you so much for taking a few moments. Thank you very, very much. And, you know, thank you for saying those words. That was very, very important. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Senator Blumenthal here on WACC 600. We continue our tribute to the L'Ambiance tragedy this morning.
Yeah, and I do think that he brings up a point that I'm hoping to talk to Congressman Himes about, which is in regards to OSHA. I'm wondering if our numbers are looking better. You know, it's been 33 years. Are we seeing a better trend when it comes to these construction sites and people being safer? I'm just thinking back, Tony, which is a completely different situation. But, you know, when they opened the Sono collection earlier last year, there was a construction worker who died there from a totally different situation. But, you know, I just think about, you know, these guys and these women who are putting themselves in this situation, these are very dangerous. I've got to imagine up there with like mining, that construction work has to be one of the more dangerous jobs that you're kind of risking your life. I mean, you ever seen like the people who sit on the pillars in New York City or anywhere around here? I mean, it's just very intimidating what they do. And I'm just wondering, you know, 33 years later, are we progressing? Is OSHA progressing? Are we seeing less and less of these tragedies happening? So maybe Congressman Himes has a little insight on that.
Well, in fact, we've got him here right now. So let's go right to him. Congressman Jim Himes with us here this morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Tony. Melissa, thank you so much for doing this commemoration. It's painful for a lot of us who have shown up in person in Bridgeport every single year to stand with the families and the brothers and sisters of the labor movement and the priests who were there and the journalists who were there. It's just so painful not to be able to do that again. That was always such an amazing moment. So you guys are really wonderful to help us commemorate what happened so many decades ago, and to do it in the safe way that we know we need to do these things now. But thank you for not letting the memory of those 28 people and what we learned, what Senator Blumenthal was talking about, what we learned. Thank you for not letting that that memory fade.
Absolutely, it's something that should be remembered 100 years from now. We still should be doing this in some shape or form. Congressman, do you remember where you were when all this was happening?
I was. I think I may have been distracted by other things like college, you know, obviously this was devastating for our community, but the shockwaves, I certainly remember. It was a national story. It was a national story because of the loss of life, which is not anything we ever anticipate in this country. We think that we've got the safety standards. We think that that's the kind of thing that doesn't happen, as Dick Blumenthal was saying, in the United States. But it did, and it was a it was a national story. And it was, you know, it's like, it's a little bit, I can't help reflect that it's a little bit like where we are now, in the sense that, my gosh, I mean, in the state of Connecticut, we're a small state and, you know, we've lost over 1,200 people, of our fellow citizens, to this COVID thing. And as horrible as it is, the other thing I'm sure people remember from 33 years ago was how much people came together. You know, people that might not have given a thought to each other, just that guy down the street or, you know, that worker that I see every once in a while or whatever. We came together in a way that it's pretty rare. Pretty rare. And it's one of the silver linings of where we are today. You know, as awful as the loss of life and the tragedy and the economic pain that we're all experiencing, you know, whenever that happens to us, as it happened 33 years ago, my gosh, we come together. We come together to support each other, to remember what's important, and help each other out. And it's I have a little bit of that same feeling today, given what's happening, that I know we all experienced, not just at L'Ambiance decades ago, but after 9/11 and after all the other tragedies that have affected our country.
Congressman, in the beginning of our show, we were actually playing a little bit of audio from John Pendergrass, who was the Assistant Secretary of OSHA at the time when this all happened. He had done a press conference about 6 months after the collapse happened, and he really points the finger at, you know, like I said, that this could have been avoided, that this was something where it came down to a lift, how much concrete or how much was being poured out that day and the pressure of it all. And that not only could this have been avoided because there was an issue, but that it actually had failed. This lift had failed a couple of times before L'Ambiance Plaza went down. It's been 33 years. I mean, has OSHA found that we are doing better when it comes to protecting our construction workers? Are we seeing less deaths? Are we seeing less of these accidents happening?
Well, I think if you look at the big sweep of time, Melissa, I mean, go back 33 years, go back 50 years. I overheard you say, you know, all those guys sitting on the girder on that skyscraper in New York City probably 100 years ago. Needless to say, that would never happen today. And so in the broad sweep of time, yeah, we do better. We learn more. We have safer materials and safer procedures. You know, after L'Ambiance, finally, way too late, that building procedure was no longer permitted. What's troubling, though, is that we could do so much better. We could do so much better. We could be better prepared. We could actually think about safety at times other than when a tragedy forces us to do so. And again, I'm sort of drawn to the parallels to where we are today. You know, we could think about preparation. We could think about safety procedures and regulation, not as something that's a big pain in the neck and we need to take it away and get rid of all the regulation because that's what makes jobs in the economy. No, those regulations are there to keep people alive, to make sure that 28 people who had every right to come home to their families that night decades ago can do so. And, you know, this is a moment where I want to thank our brothers and sisters in the unions. You know, day in and day out, they fight not just for the economic well-being of their membership and of workers everywhere. They fight for safety, you know, and they get pushback and they get, you know, efforts to make the unions go away. But, I mean, let's remember who's really doing the work to not just create, you know, economic decency for our hardworking men and women, but the basic safety that means, you know, and your family knows that you're coming home. You're coming home tonight.
Very important. Congressman Himes, we thank you for taking a few moments, and thank you so much for being here this morning. It means a lot.
Thank you so much, Tony and Melissa. It's really a wonderful thing of you guys to step in when we can't do what we've done every year and come together to grieve. So thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Congressman Jim Himes here on WACC 600. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we are going to read all of the names. Where there are 28 workers that lost their lives that day, but they read 29 names because there was a gentleman that passed away, I guess, a little while afterwards, years afterwards, but due to his injuries, I guess.
From the collapse.
From the collapse. So they add him to that list as well. We'll get to that coming up. Dan McInerney is going to help us with that. But right now, we go to Joe Ganim, the mayor of Bridgeport. He's here with us today. Mayor, how you doing today?
I'm good. And to you, Tony, Melissa, and WICC, the last part of what Congressman Jim Himes said, I want to echo. Thank you for allowing us to remember in an awkward situation where we can't come together because of this pandemic, yet we remember a terrible tragedy in the 29, as you mentioned, 29 lives, their families, but a whole community that mourned. And even 33 later, years later, as you see, with your help, continue to kind of mourn together. And I know you had other elected officials who I respect dearly and appreciate so much, a U.S. senator, or lieutenant governor, and so on. Appreciate them being a part of this. So many ways it was, if you don't mind me just for a minute, it was certainly a Bridgeport tragedy, almost like 9/11 in New York, but in our scale, you know, where all of a sudden you turn around and you probably remember where you were if you were around that day, and I do, and as you heard, others do too. And the loss of life, certainly tragic, the families that are impacted, and as was mentioned, somewhat reflective of, in a different way, what people are going through today on a much larger scale. And just two other things that I want to mention, which you touched on, Melissa, about workplace safety. And there was and has been an evolution due to elected officials, federal elected officials predominantly, union leaders, representatives of men and working men and women, coming together to make greater strides in workplace safety. And that is somewhat of a tribute to the loss of lives that we've had at L'Ambiance in Bridgeport. I think nationally they've Ocean and many have put in place things that would hopefully never allow this to happen again in our country. So that's good. I don't know if you want to cut in, but I have one more thing to mention as well, which is so clear today. People coming together, saying, how can I help? Risking at that time, you say that the unnamed, the 29 people came together in a way around L'Ambiance that Bridgeport had not seen in a long time, maybe since the passing of national calamity in wartime. It came together in such a way that it was rallying of just private citizens, government entities, union leaders, and then individual heroes. So it's that spirit I hope that we can carry forward as we go through what we're doing today. Certainly weeks ahead of us still have to meet it, but same type of heroism we see every day. So lastly, just thanks to those heroes, many of them the representatives of working men and women, the building trades, the operating engineers, and everyone who was on that site and their leadership. And today it's the healthcare workers, frontline uniform services, and as Tom Wilkinson pointed out, the grocery store workers who are battling to make sure that we forget about it. But without food, substance, and the availability of that, we'd have a whole nother tragedy.
Mayor Ganim, I know we are running a little tight on time, but I know you went into office your first time around in 91, so which is only 4 years after this happened. Where were you when this all went on? And I mean, you were obviously up and coming for the city of Bridgeport.
Absolutely. I just kind of started to get my feet into how I wanted to turn from a private lawyer. I was to doing something in public service, and I was kind of working through that. I was at the courthouse on Golden Hill Street, as I recall, as a lawyer doing some legal work, representing somebody. And, of course, that shot of what happened, so to speak, echoed into everyone's ears. Everyone stopped and wanted to know what was going on and kind of rallied around to see what and where and how, what happened, because it was unclear for a moment or two, or at least more than that. And then so I was in Bridgeport. I was on Golden Hill Street, a few blocks away. From the time I was mayor, even before that, we continued. And I think I probably participated in more of the annual events than certainly any other mayor, because I've served longer. But there have been others, and everyone has stepped up to the plate and said, thank you. We remember, expressed condolences to family members year after year. We've had wonderful kind of comings together around this. So, it's been something that we'll continue to mourn and remember into the future, I hope.
When this happened, that I mentioned it earlier in the show this morning, I was working, I don't know if you remember, do you remember the Diderio station, WDJZ, up on Boston
Sure.
Avenue? And I was working there with a fellow named Russ Knight, and I think I was in the business maybe 2 or 3 years at the time. And I remember Mayor Busey, who was the in office at the time of this collapse. He came up several times. He was on the air with us. And I just remember looking at him and saying, oh, my God, this poor guy, he looks so tired and like it looks like he hadn't any sleep in probably 3 or 4 weeks by the time he got to us. It was just an amazing thing how he held up through this whole thing. And I think we'd be remiss not to mention Tom Busey in his leadership through all of this.
Absolutely. And I know you said WDJZ, and I know that the Dario family has great history in the city. And I know them personally and how they provided free support over there with trucks and things like that. You needed everybody to step in who had a means and said, let's help move this rubble and help. So I tip my hat to them and their contributions, not only to L'Ambiance, but the city and everyone who I can't name. I'm sure there were companies, everyone, if you went down the list, that was Bridgeport related, just probably went to Busey at the time or somebody said, how can I help? How can I help? We should go down there. And they called them the mole. People who actually went in, I don't think I could do it. You never know when the call comes, but to rise to the level of heroism when you go in through rubble trying to find hopefully live bodies, but people nonetheless that may have been kind of trapped in the rubble, and people did that. That was done, and it's a part of it, the history of what happened, and it's real tribute to how Americans, the Bridgeporters in this case and beyond, you know, rise to the occasion when the call comes. So. I think it's a great example, if we can look at it with somewhat less emotion 33 years later, and how we face collectively, I'd like to think, certainly in our city and beyond, what we're going through now. And if you haven't been struck by this, you're lucky by grace of God, but there are others that are and have, and coming together and doing our job really makes a difference. So I appreciate so much what you guys are doing today, allowing us this opportunity to remember and to think about how it impacts what we're doing and what we need to do today in Bridgeport and beyond.
Mayor Ganim, thank you so much for taking a few moments this morning. We really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again real soon, actually next Wednesday. So don't forget.
Thank you. All the best.
All right. It's Tony and Melissa in the morning at 9:30. And of course, today is the 33rd anniversary of the L'Ambiance collapse in Bridgeport. And like we were saying, it was intended to be the future home of a $17.5 million L'Ambiance Plaza complex. And efforts that afternoon focused on laying concrete slabs for the floors of a 16-story residential building. But then at around 1:36 in the afternoon, seven completed floors of the building structure toppled inward and crumbling into a pile of debris and dust. And the collapse resulted in the deaths of 29 construction workers and injuries to 22 others. Now, with us here on the telephone is Dan McInerney. And Dan is the business manager of IBEW Local 488. And Danny, we welcome you here to the show. How are you this morning?
I'm good, Tony. Thank you for having me on. Hello, Melissa. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, Dan. Thank you so much for doing this. We really appreciate it.
Well, I want to thank you because, you know, you're helping us carry on the tradition.
Well, you know,
I appreciate that.
We know that it must have been very hard for you guys because of COVID-19, social distancing. Nobody's leaving their homes. But it must have been very, very hard for you guys to just say, I guess we can't do it this year or do it virtually or whatever the case is. And we just thought it would be a nice tribute to those workers. And we just thought, you know, you just can't let it go without making some sort of mention of it. And I know you've been reading the names for got to be 10 years, right?
Yeah, all of that. And to me, it's an honor to be able to do that, quite honestly.
Okay. All right.
What is kind of your, I just think sometimes when you look at the names, like I was reading this morning, IBEW posted from a couple of years ago, the memorial, and you look at those names and I was starting to read them to Tony and both of us started to get almost choked up. There's just something about when you put a name to, you know, some of these faces, you know, instead of just hearing 28 people or you hear 29 people, you know, when you start to read the names off, all of a sudden your heart just kind of skips a beat. You know what I'm saying, Dan? So how do you kind of present this every year and have the strength to do it?
Well, I'll tell you, the honest truth is the people that come to the event are what makes it the easy to do the reading. You know, we have, it's amazing. You'll see grandchildren of deceased, you know, of the victims, I should say, and they never even met their grandfather, and they still come every year, and then their children come. It's just it's totally amazing to see how this is carried on over the 33 years.
Danny, it's all you from here on out. Go ahead.
Thank you. In memory of the construction workers who died at L'Ambiance Plaza 33 years ago, on April 23rd, 1987, Michael Adana, Augustus Allman, Glenn Canning, Mario Colello, Francesco D'Adana, William D'Adana, Donald Emmanuel, Vincent Figliomeni, Herbert Goldner Jr., Terrence Gruber, John Hughes, Joseph Lowe, John Magnoli, Rocco Mancini, Richard McGill, Mario Musso, Nicholas Nardella, John Page, Giuseppe Paternostro, Angel Antonio Perugini, John Puscar Jr., Anthony Rinaldi, Albert Ritz, Michael Rosillo, Reginald Seward, William Varga, Frank Visconti, Scott Ward, David Wheeler, aka The Mole, and in recognition of the uncommon valor and heroism of all those who participated in the rescue effort. Thank you.
Danny, thank you, my friend. Thank you very much. And, of course, our thoughts and our prayers, it goes out to the families that are listening here this morning. May we never, ever, ever forget. And I've got to tell you, very, very hard not to sit here and start to tear up a little bit. Thank you, Danny. A very good job. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Melissa. Appreciate you guys doing this today.
Tony and Melissa in the Morning, WICC 600.
You know, since the families couldn't get together, since they couldn't acknowledge this in person like they do every single year at the site of the tragedy, we thought it would be a good thing to do it on the air here. And I hope we did it justice. I really, really do. I hope that we did this justice. I hope we paid respect the way it ought to be done. Okay. But just like I said, this is the anniversary, April 23rd, 1987. Workers returned to their normal routines after having lunch, and suddenly at 1:36, the building collapsed. Everybody expected these men to come home for dinner, and it just did not happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I actually just got off the phone with Paula Gill. Paula and Patty are on their way to Bridgeport right now to lay a wreath down. Their father was one of the workers who passed away, and they have graciously decided to come and join us on the air. So I figured we would give them a call in a couple minutes to let them share their story and just talk to them about what this day kind of means for them. 33 years later, those sisters, you know, dealing with the passing of their father in this tragedy. So we look forward to talking to both Paula and Patty. They're going to be coming up in a couple of minutes. But earlier in the show, Tony, I wanted to reshare his testimony from this day, which was Al Warren. I thought it was interesting because Al was kind of talking about how, you know, for where we used to be in Bridgeport, we used to be right, half a mile away. The ICC headquarters where we were in Bridgeport was really, you could look out our windows and you could see exactly where the L'Ambiance Plaza would have been. And it's just interesting to hear Al Warren's perspective on all this, because he was, you know, right in the thick of it. He was working at the station when this all happened. So here's what Al had to say of his remembrance 33 years later of what happened that day.
But it was an uneventful day. It was a sunny day, late April. And all of a sudden, my phone rang in the studio. I picked it up. And it was a hysterical lady. She said, "Oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, the building." I said, "Calm down, Leah." I didn't understand what she was saying. So finally, she calmed down to tell me that a building near the cathedral, St. Augustine Cathedral on Washington Avenue, had collapsed. And I looked out the window. Now, we're up on the fifth floor at 177 State Street, which is like a half a mile away. And I could see the dust, cloud of dust. So I ran down and I alerted the newsroom, the news department, which, by the way, was just one of the best in the East Coast. They sent somebody over right away. And I believe WICC was the first one there.
Really?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Wow.
Our news department was just outstanding. And they covered this like a glove.
Mm.
So come to find out that the building had collapsed. And it was mayhem. It was just unbelievable. And later on, the next 3 days were just a nightmare. But the part that really got me was the moles. You ever hear of the moles? The moles were the guys that they sent in between the rocks, into all the rubble, little guys, and they're just heroes, to see if anybody was still alive. And they had listening devices that they brought inside the rubble, if you can just imagine that. And, you know, it was mayhem. All the major radio stations, news services were at WICC, you know, using our phones. I remember the stations in Boston. I remember TIC was done using our phones to call in their reports. It was something I will never forget. Mm-hmm. Just an outstanding memory, that things that you just don't forget. As you get older, there's some things you don't forget, you know. So that's one of my memories. Just, I'll never forget it. But what I remember most was the way the WICC news department covered it. It was just a pleasure to be with them. Well, at the beginning, I didn't know what was going on. You know, we just guessed until we finally found out. And then after that, all hell broke loose. And it was the biggest story in the country for 4 or 5 days. Every news cast in New York started out with that, you know, because it was so close. I didn't realize what it was until after I got off the air. You know, I just saw the rubble, and I said, well, I knew something had happened. Now, Wiebe wasn't there then. Wiebe was still in Norwalk, I believe, because we weren't connected then. So our station was the only station that had, you know, all the information. I could see it, you know, from our station on the fifth floor. It was just amazing, something I'll never forget.
Back to Tony and Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Continuing here this morning as we acknowledge the 33rd anniversary of the L'Ambiance collapse in Bridgeport. With us here on the telephone line are the daughters of Richard McGill. Richard passed away in that tragedy some 33 years ago, and his daughters Paula and Patty are here with us this morning. How are you this morning, ladies?
Good morning. We're fine, thank you.
Well, first, may we say on behalf of Melissa and myself, we certainly do say that we're very sorry for your loss. I'm sure 33 years later, the pain is still there. And I understand that both of you ladies, you're there every year when they do the tribute down there at the site.
That's correct. Yes, we are.
Okay.
So now today, you know, you guys are headed to Bridgeport, my understanding is. So what is kind of on your to-do? You know, you guys are still going to be laying a wreath down, we understand?
Yes, we've been asked to lay a wreath down, and we're honored to do that on behalf of all the men that died that day. And we will also go to my dad's cemetery later today and honor him that way and just be together.
Now, how old were you both when this happened?
I had just graduated from, or just about to graduate from college, and I was just graduating from high school.
So, relatively still very young to go through something like that. You know, I can't imagine what that day, if you guys remember back to, you know, when you got that phone call, whether it was at college or you were, you know, finishing up high school, you're just getting home. It was around lunchtime, a little after that. You know, tell us if you don't mind, you know, what that day, you know, was like. I've got to imagine it kind of replays, especially on this day every year.
Yeah, it does. We can both talk because it was a little different experience. I was at college. I was at UConn, and I got a call that it had happened because, you know, being at college, I was working after work in the pharmacy there, library there. So I didn't know because I wasn't watching TV. I was in classes and things until I got the call. So it was really tough. And most of all, it was tough on our mom having, you know, getting that call. So I left school and never went back. I did end up graduating, but I stayed home for the rest of that semester to be with my family.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I'm going to let Patty talk, too, because she had a little different experience because she was home and going to high school.
I had just gotten home from high school that day, and I got a call from my father's best friend named Rick, and he's the one that broke the news to me and told me about it. And so I immediately turned on the television, and it was all over the news. So.
Let's move away from the tragedy for a moment. What kind of a guy was your dad? What's your best memory of your dad?
This is Paula. I would say the best memory of my dad was how much and how hard he worked for his family. He loved his job, loved what he did, and he also loved time with his family. And we were very close. It was just the four of us. And my mom and dad and me and my sister. So we did a lot together. We went to the beach. We went away on vacations. We did things at home. We did yard work together, all the things you do as a family. And those were the special times. He was a very hardworking man and very, you know, that he was very driven to make sure that me and my sister and my mom had all that we needed.
Go ahead.
My memory of him for the most was he was very athletic. He loved baseball. Baseball was his thing, and he was very good at it. And he actually tried out for a minor league team. And so he encouraged me and my sister to be very athletic. And he was just a caring person. I remember him helping many of our family members and even people that were even strangers that were in need. And he just had a big heart. So miss him very much.
That's really cool that he, minor leagues, that's really neat that he was very into, and I mean, Tony and I, we love baseball, so I feel like we would have loved your dad. He sounds amazing. Now, when
he was drafted for the Minnesota Twins.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yep. So did you guys, you know, are there times where I know just as I get older and I certainly even look at my own son and I see sometimes my mom or my dad and him, you know, do you find that there are some of your quirks or some of your personality as you got older where you're still carrying your dad? I got to imagine, you know, you look in the mirror and you think, oh, dad, what are you doing there? You ever see that sometimes?
I see it in my son. This is Patty. He is 14 now, and he's extremely athletic like my father was. And there's not a sport that he's not good at. So I see my father in him, and he would have loved to have met my son. He always had two girls. He wanted a boy. And he would have had a grandson. So.
All right. And you know, I've got to say, construction work, that's hard work, man. I mean, you really earn your money, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine he was in good shape. I would imagine that when you shook his hand, it was very, very rough from all of that construction work, right?
Yeah, he was a very hard worker, both at home and at work and in playing ball. That day, though, he really wasn't supposed to have been there. He was kind of at that point in his career. He was a foreman. And he had his boss had asked him to go down and to deliver the paychecks to the workers who were there. And he was in the building for less than a minute to deliver the checks, walked in the front door and never came back out.
Oh my God.
Terrible. My
gosh. Really just makes my heart skip a beat. That's terrible.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's a horrible
story.
How's
your mom?
Mom's not well. My mom and dad were high school sweethearts. And she, it really broke her. Mm-hmm. And, she is now, of course, years later, she's now in a nursing home, at the scariest time ever with, she's got Alzheimer's.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so glad that at least you both have each other. I think that that's an amazing thing. We're certainly going to keep your mom and your whole family in our prayers. That is so so tough, but I'm so glad that you guys have each other. And my understanding, Paula, is your husband Wally in the car with you as well, or is it just the two of you?
No, he's right here.
Hey, Wally. Thank you for being such an amazing support system. We're doing okay. We're so glad that you could be with us. You know, from your perspective, I know we're kind of running close on time, but from your perspective, you know, you never met your father-in-law, but, you know, from the stories you've heard, you know, what are your thoughts on him?
I really can't repeat anything. I mean, everything, you heard it all already. So, sounds like he was a real amazing guy.
All right. Well, ladies,
my husband, I was dating him in high school. We've been married 28 years. So my father actually knew my husband.
Oh, wow.
Husband now. And ironically, my husband's birthday is today. It falls on the day of the anniversary.
Oh, wow.
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 That's okay. Unbelievable.
All right. Ladies, unfortunately, we are rapidly running out of time, but you're two very, very brave ladies, because I'll tell you something. I can't go 5 minutes talking about my father before I break down. So I give you a lot of credit. You have a lot of courage, and God bless you. The courage that you've shown through these years is just amazing. Keep your father in your mind, in your heart, at all times, and, you know, Godspeed. We love you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we got that courage from him.
I bet you did. All right. Thank you very, very much.